Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm thrilled to be with you here today. I have a great show planned. Diane Hatz, the founder and executive director of Change Food, will be my guest today. And I have a recipe to share with you. But first, I want to talk to you about some things going on in the news. I'm sure all of you heard about the DARK Act that passed through the House of Representatives last week, and I am just so shocked about that. Let me talk to you a little bit about it. The bill is a bill that big food manufacturers and corporations are trying to push through that is being labeled as a Safe Food Act. However, what it does is it is going to set up a federal law that is going to regulate, or actually not regulate, allow companies to voluntarily label GMO products if they want to. And that will be a law that will be voluntary, which means that any state laws, such as the Vermont law that is going to mandate GMO labeling, will become void. Federal law takes precedent over state law. And so it is a way that food manufacturers are going to make it illegal for states to demand GMO labeling. And I have to say, in this day and age, I am still shocked. This week I was at the farmer's market, actually just yesterday. I was at our local farmer's market, and there was a new bakery there that I had never seen making baked items. And I said, "Tell me about yourself." She said, "Well, we use the finest ingredients." I said, "Are you organic?" And she said, "No." So, of course, I said, "Well, then you're not really using the finest ingredients." And she said, "Well, we use, you know, fresh butter, milk, flour." And I said, "Well, do you know if the butter you use contains antibiotics or hormones, or if the cows are eating GMOs?" And she's like, "What are GMOs?" And I was just flabbergasted that this day and age, some people still do not know what genetically modified organisms mean. And it's just shocking to me. And so this bill is, you know, been getting a lot of publicity. I know the sustainable food movements have been signing petitions left and right to make sure that our representatives represent the people who want GMO labeling, and yet they completely sidestepped the public and once again are supporting big food corporations over the health of the people that voted them in. So on my website, I have a link to signing a petition. Please do what you can, and please talk it up. Please let people know what GMOs are. Let people know that this DARK Act has to be stopped. You know, Monsanto is just an evil company, and they are behind so much of this, and they control so much of our food supply already that we really, really have to do something. This week I actually talked about a report that was in the New York Times that had a little bit of a happy note, and that was just saying that the American diet once and for all seems to be improving a little bit. I really hope that that is true. I know in our area, certainly there's more awareness about eating healthy. Yet obesity is still, you know, one of the largest causes of cancer in this country, and soon it will overtake smoking as the principal cause of cancer. And people don't think of obesity as really being a precursor to cancer, but it is. Obesity is. It's also a precursor to heart disease, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and so many of our health care costs that are just skyrocketing through the roof are food-related diseases that are preventable. And so the more that we all raise our awareness about the foods we eat and what we're putting into our body, the healthier we all can become and the stronger the good food movement can become to fight back against these mega corporations that are really just in business to make money, to make that profit, and they have no care for people's health and the good of the people. So we all have to really band together and turn that around. I also put in my newsletter this week article on 400 companies that do not use GMOs. And that's just, you know, a good thing to print up and know which companies are being transparent and which companies are really adhering to healthy food claims. I mean, so many foods, you know, make these healthy food claims, just like this bakery at the farmer's market that said they use the finest ingredients, and yet they really have no clue what they're using. They don't know how bad our food supply is. And it's really up to all of us to educate ourselves to really, really know what is in that. Another thing in my newsletter this week was a petition asking everybody to protect people who expose the abuses in factory farms. There is a bill being passed through Congress called the Ag Gag Bill, which is going to make it illegal for people to be whistleblowers and to expose factory farms that are abusing animals and doing horrible, unsafe practices. And again, it is, you know, the laws to protect the big food manufacturers, factory farms, the people that are, you know, really poisoning our food and doing horrible things, to protect them rather than celebrate and welcome those that are going to expose the abuses. So we need to protect those people, so please sign that petition. Also, the bill that I was talking about, the DARK Act, is called the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Bill. And what's so funny is the name of that bill sounds like something, of course, that I would want to support, the Safe and Accurate Food Labeling Bill. Who wouldn't want safe and accurate food labeling? But that's what's voluntary. That is what they are trying to pass through that will be voluntary. And we want transparency to be mandatory, not voluntary. Also, we've been seeing lots of articles in the news about maritime laws and the fishing ships that are out there in the open seas with no regard for laws at all. I was reading the most disturbing article about young boys that, you know, are sold into slave labor on these fishing ships that they sell to, again, big food manufacturers. And we really need to push food manufacturers to make sure that they are purchasing food from legitimate fishing operations that are not abusing young people. And it was just a horrible article. It had me so upset. And that's one of the reasons I really tried to focus on the article about the health of the American people and that our diet's improving, just because sometimes you just want to report something happy. And it's just hard to do these days. So lots of things are going on in and around the city that I want to share with you. August 8th, there's the North Fork Craft Beer Festival out in Calverton. That's always a fun event all day long from 1 to 5:30. And Starfish Junction is the organizer for that. The Long Island Farm Tours is coming up. That's August 8th also. And this is going to be a great opportunity to visit three North Shore Nassau County farms on Long Island. Starting at 10 a.m., the coach bus leaves from Christopher Morley Park, takes you to two different farms. Each of these farms that we're going to visit have very different approaches to farming or different missions. The first one will be out at the planting fields, and it is a working farm for young adults with special needs, and they are raising vegetables in a therapeutic way that they are then donating to food pantries. The other farm is Young's Farm, which is a many-generation farm here on Long Island on the North Shore. And one of the newest members of the family is transitioning that towards organic, which is really a wonderful thing to hear, and I'm excited to learn about more about that. Then the bus will be stopping at the IE Green Homestead right here to have a farm-to-table lunch and see my homestead, where we raise all of our own vegetables and vegetables for my catering business and for my farm-to-table cooking classes, and, you know, see our beehives, taste our honey, and see what's possible to do right at home. And then the bus will continue on to the third farm, which is Three Castle Farm here in Old Westbury, where a young farmer is renting land from a homeowner who has lots of extra land. The homeowner gets to reduce their property taxes, and this other person gets to raise beautiful vegetables that she sells at the farmer's market and runs a CSA. So that's going to be a really great event. Tickets are only $50 for the coach bus and the farm-to-table lunch and the tour, or $45 for two or more tickets. So please join us for that. You can find out more about it on my website. August 9th is the Long Island Potato Festival. That's always fun with food trucks, live music, lots of activities, crafts, beverages, food, and lots of artisan products. That's also at the Calverton Links Golf Course in Calverton. August 12th, Slow Food New York City is having a gelato class, and I signed up for that. I'm really excited. It's at Le Albero dei Gelati, and that was the ice cream shop that there was a great article in last week's food section of the New York Times about unbelievable coconut ice cream, vegan coconut ice cream that they make, and I'm really excited to learn how to make that. So if you're interested, go to the Slow Food New York City website to sign up for that. Tickets are only $20 for members, $25 for non-members. And for those of you that do not know Slow Food is an international organization. There's over 200 chapters here in the U.S. I co-chair our local chapter on Long Island called Slow Food North Shore. But Slow Food is a pushback against fast food. It's about good, clean, and fair food, meaning good for the planet, good for your body, clean, without preservatives, without GMOs, and fair, meaning that the farmers and the farm workers and the consumers are all being paid fair or paying fair prices. So it's really a incredible organization. They're doing a lot of work with indigenous people. They're supporting a project, 10,000 Gardens in Africa. And it's just a great organization. So check it out online at slowfoodusa.org. And please join and please come to some of our events. Also, August 14th to 16th is the annual NOFA Summer Conference. That takes place at UMass in Amherst. It's all day long, lots of events going on. Go to the NOFA website for more information on that. August 16th, I'll be having my second yoga and farm-to-table cooking class retreat here at the IE Green Homestead. It's a full day of yoga, meditation, and chanting, and then a vegetarian cooking class, and we'll be doing a vegan Indian cooking class that day. It's a great event. Last one was very successful, and I hope you can join us for that. More information is also on my website. August 16th to the 23rd is the Woodstock Fruit Festival, and that's at Camp Walden on Lake Trout in the Southern Adirondacks. And that's a fun event if you're into, you know, getting away from the city for the weekend. Go check that out. Great things are coming up, of course. The New York Coalition for Healthy School Food is having their fall gala on October 6th. And Just Food is having their annual event, Let Us Eat Local, on October 5th. So those are coming up, and I'll share more information with you about those great events as we get closer. So before I invite Diane on to talk with us about her organization, Change Food, I'd like to share a quick recipe with you, and this is quick. It's called Quick Szechuan Tofu. And sometimes you don't want to do a whole elaborate meal. You're just looking to, you know, quickly put something on the table. And literally this dish is on the table in 15 minutes. You take one cake of extra firm organic tofu, and I cut it into thirds, press it between a towel just to remove some of the water, and then I cut it into cubes. You'll also want a tablespoon of grated ginger, four cloves of garlic minced, some olive oil for the stir frying, two tablespoons of tamari, one tablespoon of nutritional yeast, and nutritional yeast is good tasting yeast. It's not like brewer's yeast or baking yeast. And nutritional yeast is used a lot in vegan cooking. Very often they make mock cheese sauces and things like that with it. But just a tablespoon added to this, to the sauce that we'll be creating in the pan, just gives the sauce a little thickness to it and makes it a little richer. So it's really a great addition. One tablespoon aji marin, which is sweet rice wine. One teaspoon of dark sesame oil. And one tablespoon of sriracha sauce. And that's up to you, but it just makes it a little bit spicy and, you know, adds a lot of nuanced flavors that's really great. So you're going to cover the bottom of a cast iron pan with oil. When the oil is hot, you add the cubes of tofu. And as soon as you add them into the hot oil, you'll start hearing them sizzle. Allow the tofu to develop a golden skin on one side first. You can shake the pan a little bit back and forth to keep it from sticking. But even if it starts to stick, it will easily release once that golden skin of the first side is created. If you start to stir the tofu too soon, the part that's sticking to the pan will stay stuck to the pan and the tofu will start breaking apart. So let that sear that one side really well, and then you can keep shaking the pan and then start, take it flat spatula all the way down to the bottom of the pan and remove the tofu that's stuck to the pan that way. And that way the skin will remove with the tofu and you won't be breaking it apart. Turn the tofu over, try to get the other side golden brown just for a few minutes. Then add the garlic and the ginger and continue cooking at medium-high heat, stirring constantly for about 5 minutes. Then add the mirin, the tamari, the dark sesame oil, and the nutritional yeast. And then you add the sriracha sauce. And just let that cook a little bit. Add some more tamari or sriracha sauce if desired. Give it a taste. And that is it. It's really quick, really fast, and quite delicious. Okay, and now it's my pleasure to invite Diane Hatz on. She is she's a creative marketing expert and events innovator. She is the founder and executive director of Change Food, where she uses her expertise to develop creative projects, raise awareness, and motivate people to take actions to change the food system. She's working on many different projects, and I'm going to let her tell us about that. Prior to this, or actually simultaneously, she was also the founder and organizer for the TEDx Manhattan Talks, Changing the Way We Eat, which was a great event that I know I talked to all of you about many times. I attended, and there were screenings around the country of the TEDx Manhattan Talks, and many of my guests were guests at TEDx Manhattan. I met them there. So I'm really excited to invite Diane on. Diane, are you with me?
I am. How are you, Bhavani?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good. Well, I'm so thrilled to finally be having you on the show. I know it's been a long time waiting.
Yes. I've been looking forward to it.
Yes. So I was so thrilled to learn about your organization, Change Food, because when I first met you, I really just knew about the TEDx Manhattan things and thought that was enough of a job. And then I started learning more about what you do. Tell us about Change Food and how, what inspired you to start that and how long it's been going on and all of that.
Sure. So Change Food is a nonprofit, and we raise awareness and educate consumers about both problems and solutions with today's food in the food system. So our main focus and the way we're helping to shift the food system is through putting on special events. And then we also find ways to provide tools and resources to people around the country and really increasingly the world so that people can educate others in their own community. Change Food is a strong believer in change coming within a community. So I can't go somewhere and tell somebody what to do, but what I can do is provide tools and resources to people in local communities and have them go out and educate their friends, families, and neighbors. Basically came about, it's just an extension of the work I've been doing in food and farming over the past 17 or so years. I started out as an advocate and was working to shut down factory farms. And after a couple years, I realized it's a really tough, depressing thing to work on. So I was very fortunate. I approached the funder and, I said that I think that we need to do something positive. We need to promote solutions. And I was able to found a bunch of programs that went on to be successful. And through that, I ended up with a scholarship to the TED conference. While I was there, I was basically complaining about the food. And someone said, put on your own TEDx or your own TED event, which the TEDx program had just started. So I started TEDx Manhattan. And the reason you hadn't really heard about Change Food is because TEDx Manhattan became so successful that Change Food was sort of put on a back burner for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. We've been around since 2013. So tomorrow is our second anniversary.
Mm, congratulations.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. So so you started Change Food while you were already doing the TEDx Manhattan Talks, yes?
Correct. Correct. I had an institute for a while, and then just, you know, as things shift and change, I ended up closing that down, and then I started Change Food during that whole time I was doing TEDx Manhattan, and it, as I said, it just became so successful that it, I didn't have the resources to promote both Change Food and TEDx Manhattan. So now I've just retired TEDx Manhattan, and I'm really starting to focus on getting information about Change Food, letting people know that we're here, you know, that we do provide resources, and we are trying to help people with their journey toward eating healthier.
Mm-hmm. So through Change Food, you're going to try to do some events that are similar to TEDx Manhattan?
I have to officially state that any Change Food event is not affiliated with TED or TEDx, but obviously
okay.
I have 5 years of experience putting on events. I'm just now, and I'm so excited to be doing this, I'm just now putting together information for the Change Food Festival. So the Change Food Festival will be happening in New York City. It'll be late March or early April. I don't have a definite date yet because we're still locking down a venue. It will have a component where we will have short talks, but with Change Food now at the helm, we're able to do a lot more that was outside the scope of a TEDx program. So we're going to have workshops. We're going to do a themed dinner. We might do webinars leading up. We're going to have a film festival, panel discussions. And one of the things I'm really focused on is trying to bring in as many people from other groups to have them be part of the event. And I'm also speaking with other people who are putting on other food events to see how we can sort of sync and link and carry momentum from one event to the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find, you know, in my work with I Eat Green, you know, I am one of the founding members of the Long Island Food Coalition, which is also trying to bring other organizations together. I think more and more we need to collaborate and work together to really build the momentum of the sustainable food movement, because there's so many of us doing similar things, and I just think if we were all working together, we could kind of catapult it a little bit further and
exactly.
really make
exactly.
more happen.
I agree with you 100%. One of the projects that I'm working on with Change Food is I'm working with a professor at NYU, and we are looking into putting together a sustainable database for sustainable food and farming, and it'll be a way for people to find out who's doing what where and to help with linkages and connections. So I'm currently figuring that out with her in fundraising, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Good. We'll definitely include the Long Island Food Coalition because we're going to try to do that for our area, and we're very close to you. You know,
definitely.
I'm only 30 minutes outside of the city, so it's different than those that are all the way out on the East End. I really, when I first joined Slow Food, I actually joined the New York chapter because there was not one anywhere near me. The other one was out on, you know, out in the East End, which is almost 2 hours away. So New York City is really my home base, too.
Right. With this database, our goal is actually to be global. We're trying to figure out if we're going to start like regionally, like place-based, or if we're going to start by area. So it might be, you know, everybody working on nutrition or everybody working in health, or it might be everybody in a geographical area. There's a lot of very smart technology people who are trying to figure out databases and how best for this to work. But I agree with you that the food movement right now is at the point where we have to start collaborating. We have to start sharing our work. We have to stop, like, for the nonprofits, there's this fear a lot of times that there's only so much funding, which I don't believe. You know, we have to start sharing our resources and sharing our knowledge and building together, and that's the only way we're going to achieve the food system that we want.
Right. We have to change the capitalist market and realize we're not in competition with each other, but we're partners.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
You know, so often, sometimes you feel like there's competition as to, like, which nonprofit's the best, and it's really about collaboration, working together. We have to be different than the capitalists that are all about profit.
Exactly. Exactly.
So what happened with the TEDx events? Since TEDx Manhattan was so successful, I mean, it was just amazing, Diane, what you did with that.
Oh.
In just 5 years, and it was being watched around the world. It was just amazing. What changed? Why did you decide to stop that and put your efforts into Change Food?
Well, bottom line was, it was time. I got 5 amazing events. I spent 5 years, under the TED umbrella. What a lot of people don't realize is the TEDx program is set up to be a specific type of program. So even though it's independently organized, there's a lot of guidelines and a lot of rules. And it's fantastic for the TEDx format. TEDx Manhattan had become so successful, it was just time to sort of branch out. So these things like film festivals and, even panel discussions aren't allowed at a TEDx. So I am forever indebted to TED. I am going to the TED conference. I am still part of the TED community. They have done more to help train me in putting on events, but it was a mutual agreement between both the TED program and myself that with Change Food, I could do so much more. I mean, I can take things. What I'd like to eventually do is to take the talks from both TEDx Manhattan, other TEDx events, and the Change Food Festivals, and then go on tour across the country and put on events in local communities. And with that type of thing, I can't do that through TED. So it's mm-hmm. the time. It's time.
Right, right. Looking over your bio, I was just amazed to also find that you were also the co-founder and director of the Glenwood Institute for Sustainable Food. You also were the executive producer of the Matrix movies, which are the award-winning animated films that are just absolutely great. I've gotten many YouTube little links to them. Tell us about that. How did you get involved in producing the Matrix movies? And then also tell us a little bit about the Glenwood Institute.
So when I was getting depressed fighting factory farms, and I was given the opportunity to shift and have a more positive spin on things, I was putting together this program called Sustainable Table. And Sustainable Table, which still exists, I'm not part of it anymore. It's through the Grace Communications Foundation. But Sustainable Table is an educational resource where people can learn very simply what's wrong with the food system. And then there's a lot of tips and things you can do. And like, you can download a question for a farmer, if you want to find out how your food is produced, or a question for a restaurant manager. So I'm putting that together. And then I realized, well, if we're to say there's a problem, we need to promote a solution. So I then started to put together the Eat Well Guide, which is also still happening. I'm not part of it. But with the Eat Well Guide, you just put in your zip code, and it brings up farms, stores, and restaurants that sell local sustainable food in your area. So those two things were underway. And then we got an invitation to apply for a free grant for Flash Animations. So we ended up winning the contest. And our whole kids had been on factory farming, so we sent all this information to Free Range Studios, which was the company that had hosted the competition, and they were like, somebody in their conference room just said, this is so much like The Matrix. And as soon as they said that, the entire Matrix series was just wrote itself. So The Matrix is an animated short. There's actually 3 of them. So they're animated shorts about factory farming, and they use humor and satire as an educational tool. So it's believe it or not, it's a humorous way to look at the very serious problems with factory farming. What a lot of people don't realize is when they were released in 2003, so Sustainable Table, the Eat Well Guide, and the Matrix all launched on the same day in 2003. And I tell everyone now that's a really stupid thing to do, because they all took off and we were going crazy, and we had no idea The Matrix was going to become as big as it did. But back in 2003, there was no social media. There was no YouTube. There was no Facebook. There was no Twitter. There was nothing, nothing. So people literally had to email it from one person to the next. So back then, when we hit 20 million views, that was beyond, so far beyond what any other type of video or short or informational type of piece had done. Since then, with the advent of social media, you know, the Meetix now is on so many different platforms, it's impossible to even guess how many views it's had, but I'm sure it's in the hundreds of millions at this point. So one of the things I've carried with me from actually my days, I used to work in the music industry before I got into the nonprofit world, and I have a interest in pop culture, and I always say we need more rock and roll in the food movement, and the Meetix was. It was cutting edge, you know, for its time, it was a little rock and roll, and then when I moved on to TEDx Manhattan, I tried to bring that sense of sort of fun with me, and now with the Change Food Festival, I'm also doing the same thing. We want to let people know that it's not intimidating, it's not overwhelming, and even though there are serious issues, they don't have to be depressing. But, you know, if you just focus on food that tastes good, you are going to be eating healthy food. And I'm not talking addiction to sugar or anything like that. I'm talking about real food. With regard to the Glenwood Institute, the programs have become so successful, I was given an opportunity to basically branch out of the Grace Communication Foundation. So I had known the president at the time, Judith LaBelle, and I did basically a partnership with Glenwood, so founded the Institute through them. I would say that was sort of my incubation period. During that time, TEDx Manhattan had launched, and as I had mentioned, it sort of took over everything. There was just a lot of shifting going on after a couple of years, and I realized that I really wanted to go out on my own. So with the Institute, I was connected with another organization. Now, I am my own nonprofit. I have a fiscal sponsor, but I'm independent, and I have a lot more creative freedom, and that's something that's very important to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's amazing all the different fires you have going at one time. It's just inspiring.
My whole comment with creativity, there's an organization called Ag Arts. I've been working with Mary Swander. She's the poet laureate in Iowa, and then Fred Kirschman from Leopold Center and Stone Barns. The three of us are founding this organization called Ag Arts, and it's bringing the art world and the food community together. So it's imagining food systems through the arts. I truly, truly believe, I don't even believe, I know that if we don't get more creativity and more artists involved in shifting the food system, we're not going to get everybody on board. You need that. You need to activate both sides of a person's brain. So we just need that creative influx. And there are so many artists working on serious issues around food.
Mm-hmm. Well, my background is also art, and I'm actually for the first time heading out to Burning Man this summer. And I'm really excited. Wow. You know, I'm going to be the lead chef for an art camp and cook my way through my first Burning Man experience. And I'm really so excited. So, you know, it's really been fun for me because my creative juices are turning constantly of, you know, what I can make and how I can prepare it and, you know, how to do it simple and be creative and, you know, because food has become my art. You know, I went to art school, but then I graduated college and instantly had a baby and was a single mom and, you know, had to make a living. And so food became my art. And yes, I'm really looking forward to be surrounded by all this inspiring art and merging my food with that. So I'm really interested to learn more about this ag art. I think it's a great idea. And, you know, artists really are the trendsetters. I mean, you look at every community that is unaffordable right now. It started when artists moved in. You know, Soho was nothing, you know, years ago, and then artists moved in, and then it became overpriced, and artists couldn't afford to be there. And then Williamsburg, when I got out of college, was a dump. I mean, nobody wanted to live in Williamsburg, and I had friends that were living in lofts in Williamsburg, and, you know, I would go to their place and lock my car and just, like, run into their apartment. I didn't want to be on the street, you know. It was really dangerous at that time. And now look at Williamsburg. So it's, you know, it's artists really make that change happen.
They do, and they make us think. There's this one artist who spoke at TEDx Manhattan, Sam Van Aken, and he's grafted 40 types of stone fruit onto one tree. And it started as an art project. He now has realized that what he's doing is he's saving heirloom varieties of fruit. One of the reasons he started this project was because an orchard near him was going to be demolished, and it was the last, those were the last trees of these types of fruit. So he's found a way to raise awareness through his creativity about heirloom varieties of fruit and how we're losing our diversity in food. And I think that's just phenomenal. You know, rather than a, I mean, some people want the research paper and they want to read, and that's for them. But, like, I'm not gonna. But when I see Sam's project, I totally dig in for more information because it's so inspiring.
What's Sam's last name?
Van Aken.
Van Aken.
It's the Tree of 40 Fruit.
Was that on display at in Milan? I saw a couple trees with many different fruits on it, and I thought, wow, you know, that was really cool. I wonder if that was his.
You know what? I don't know. He hasn't said anything to me. It could be he's all over the place. He's become basically a global phenomenon since his TEDx Manhattan talk.
Right, right. Well, that's one thing that I was amazed by with all the TED Talks. I mean, you do a TED Talk, and it just catapults you into a whole other level. I mean, I've seen it with so many of the people that have spoken at TEDx Manhattan and beyond. So it's really great. Dan, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the biggest problems with the food system and some solutions you might be thinking about, okay? Everyone
great.
Out there,
thank
don't
you.
Go away. We'll be right back. I'm talking with Diane Hatz from Change Food. Be right back.
Stay tuned to PRN.FM for more empowering ideas from progressive voices.
This is Guy McPherson. Join me and Mike Sliva with Nature Bats Last Radio on PRN.FM. Catch us Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. on the East Coast. You can rate the show on iTunes, and if you don't catch us live, you can catch us 24/7 in the PRN archives. That's 8 p.m. Eastern Time with Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM.
Stay tuned for more cutting-edge viewpoints on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Diane Hatz, the founder and executive director of Change Food. Hi, Diane, you with me?
Yes, I am.
Great. So what do you see as one of the biggest problems with our current food system, and what suggestions might you have to try to help people turn that around?
So, I mean, I hate to say there are a lot of problems with our food system, but I think
we
one of the
that.
Biggest. I'm going to give you two because I can't decide between the two. So one of them is food waste. And food waste is such a huge problem. We waste up to 40% of the food that we produce. In some parts of the world, it's up to 50%. So a lot of the food that's wasted is actually from people who buy too much food or who cook too much food and then throw it away. So a very simple solution to that is to make a shopping list, to only buy what you need. Don't, you know, when you see those 2-for-1 sales or those 4-for-1 sales, if it's something that's going to go bad quickly, really think twice about it because it's not a deal if you're throwing half of it away.
Right.
Restaurants, supermarkets, I mean, there's a huge problem with that. Now, one of the biggest problems is ugly fruit or ugly produce. And Jamie Oliver, Dana Cowan from Food and Wine. I mean, there are some really well-respected, well-known people who are now working on this issue. And what it's about is that food has to be a certain size and a certain shape to go into a regular supermarket. And there's a whole educational campaign to get people to understand that just because a cucumber might be like really curled, it's still fine. It's perfectly delicious. I actually get a little scared when I go in a store and see all these like perfect tomatoes, because I know they've been sprayed with chemicals and they were picked when they were green, and they're not going to taste that as good as a real tomato is going to taste that you can get at a farmer's market. So, you know, when you go shopping, if you see a carrot with two pieces of carrot coming off it, buy it. Like, just support the fact that food doesn't have to be perfect, because if we start doing that, supermarkets will start selling it. The other thing that I think is a massively huge issue is labeling. I think consumer confusion is the biggest issue out there. I think almost everyone has heard the word organic. Everyone knows there's problems with the food system, but people don't know what to do, and they're totally confused. So Consumer Reports did a survey less than a year ago, and they found out that most people thought that the term natural was better than or equal to organic. The term natural, and that's the one label I had take issue with some others, but natural is meaningless. Natural is meaningless, and people need to understand that. So when you see natural on any product, frankly, I get suspect at this point, because I was trained as a marketer. They know that it's a term that people think is good and green, and it can be natural and it can have hormones. It can be natural and it can have added antibiotics. It can be natural. It can be genetically altered. So the natural label is meaningless. I can't stress that enough to people. So I would say don't just look at the label on the pretty package. Turn over and read ingredients. And if you see words on there that you don't understand, don't buy it. Look for
right.
food. And another tip a lot of people suggest is 5 ingredients or less. You know, and I heard you mentioned earlier about the GMO issue and the labeling issue. It's a huge, huge, huge problem. Again, it's a labeling thing, and industry is smart and savvy, and they know that we're catching on. So we all have to just take a little time and do some research. Consumer Reports has information about different types of labels. So people really should try to understand, like, cage-free doesn't mean the animal's running out on a pasture. Cage-free could be a bunch of chickens crammed together in a barn, and they still can't move.
Right. Right. I just saw that very disturbing video come through my Facebook, too, about those cage-free birds that could not even move or stand up. And, oh,
yeah.
It was horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. It's horrible.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I have the same issue with that, with labeling, you know, or anytime I see, you know, heart healthy, or, you know, the little pink ribbon for, you know, good for your health, I'm at suspect, because, you know, they make these partnerships that are just ridiculous. And, you know, if they can package it, you know, and put it on a box, they're going to sell more. And, you know, most things are, you're better off buying things that aren't in packages.
Exactly. And I think if people just start to realize that the pretty pictures and the terms that they use are oftentimes misleading, that they need to look beyond that, to look at what type of food it is. And I have to say, I agree with you. We should all eat totally unprocessed food. But I'm going to be honest. I'm not gonna. But I like tortilla chips. But I get organic tortilla chips, and I know they're non-GMO. You know, I just take that extra step to look for stuff that's not, you know, because there are foods that might have corn, oil, and salt. So you think, oh, this is good. But it could be genetically modified, so it
right.
might not be so
right.
good. And the other thing a lot of people don't realize is it might say GMO-free corn, but the oil could have GMO ingredients in it. So
right. Well, canola oil is one of the most genetically modified crops around, as well as soybean. And when they use vegetable oil, it's, you know, soybean oil or canola oil. And, yeah, it's all GMO'd.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say anything bad about the organic canola growers, but I have been told that at this point there's no way to tell 100% if any canola is free of genetically engineered ingredients, and that it's best not to even use it. I mean, I look for, like, sunflower, safflower at this point.
Really? So even the organic canola oil is not, you can't be sure of its quality?
I have heard that. I buy sunflower safflower. I don't want to make claims. I know that there are a lot of farmers who are doing really great work. It's with genetic drift. It's really hard to control at this point.
Right. Right.
Who knows? If it's one part per million in a farmer's field, who knows? Might not be.
Yeah, also I have real suspect with things that are organic that are coming from South America, Central America, even though it says
China.
Organic. It's traveling so far, but, when they outlawed all those really horrible pesticides, where did they send them? That's
right.
Where they sent them,
right.
And so they were using them down there, and, it's hard enough to monitor the organic farms here. I can't imagine how they're doing it in some of these other countries. So,
right, and you figure those foods are harvested way before the food is actually ripe. So you're not getting the nutrients that you would get if you're buying something local.
Right. Right. People always ask me which is better, local or organic. And I always say I want both, local and organic. And that's, why I try to grow as much as I can. But, we're living in a short season here on the Northeast. So, I'm not in California. I'm not in a climate where I can grow year-round. I don't have a greenhouse, so I do the best I can, and I try to can and freeze what I can. But then I am dependent on buying from markets like California, when they're bringing the lettuce in. And so I know that it's traveling far, but there's really nothing I can do. This is where I live. And I don't want it, I can eat less salad in the winter, and I do. I certainly don't eat. In the summer, I'm having salad every single day. And I wouldn't say I have salad every single day in the winter. So I guess that's the kind of change that you make when you're trying to eat more local.
Right. The other thing to remember is when you're doing local organic, I agree with you, like organic local is the best if you don't want to dig. There are so many farmers, especially I know in this area, who don't have organic certification, who are better than organic. What a lot of people don't realize, and I'm not trying to confuse everyone, but with organic food, you can use class one pesticides. They're not pesticide free. That's not correct when people say that, but these are natural pesticides like BT toxin, which good, bad, whatever, but there are farmers who grow with no pesticides whatsoever who do not have organic certification, but you have to ask the farmer. You have to know what farms are using what practices, and that does take a little more research. So for people who really care and who really want to know, you just have to feel comfortable talking with a farmer. And just remember, if enough people do this, a farmer will be motivated to shift practices. It's not easy. The whole thing with the food system is I don't blame the farmers. It's not the farmers. They're doing the best they can. And they're trying to make a living. They're trying to put their kids through school. A lot of them get sold a bill of goods by a large company, and a lot of them don't have the money to do the transitioning. So we need to look at, those of us in the movement need to look at what can we do to get farmers to be able to raise food that's better for all of us, that uses less chemical fertilizers and pesticides.
Right. Right. And having those conversations, I really trust, I don't believe that if you go to a farmer's market and ask a farmer that they're going to look you in the face and lie. I just don't believe it. I think the farmers are honest. And if you ask them, I've been told by many farmers, no, we're not organic, but we use sustainable practices. And then you say, what does that mean? And you talk to them and you have a conversation and then you make the decision. If this is a farmer's livelihood, I have the luxury where I'm growing fruits and vegetables, and if I lose a crop, I just, then I'll go to the farmer's market and buy it there. It's not my livelihood. So I can take that risk. But if you're going to lose all of your tomatoes, if you don't do something to control whatever might be going on, that's a judgment choice that they have to make. And, you just hope that they're making the best choice that they can for themselves and for the public.
Yeah.
You, I don't blame the farmer either. They are trying to do the best they can. So what have you seen as you've been working in the food and farming arena for 17 years, you said. What changes have you seen, and what do you feel most hopeful about?
One of the biggest changes really is the increase in farmers markets. I don't have the statistics on it, but the number of farmers who are part of farmers markets now has so dramatically increased, and that's only because people are demanding local food and food from a market. So that's really, really encouraging. The biggest sign that we've made inroads into education, but also into the industry, understanding that the organic, local, sustainable food movement is not going away, is large supermarkets. 10 years ago, I'd be hard-pressed to go to Delaware, where, you know, my family is, where I was born, and to go into a supermarket and to find organic or local food. Now, I've been in supermarkets all over the country, and there's always an organic section. The fact that that's happened, because, you know, they work on such slim profit margins, the fact that that has happened means that those of us in the food movement who've been raising awareness and educating are making inroads. We could probably spend a whole hour just talking about Walmart. I have a lot of issues. I have a lot of issues with Walmart. But the fact that Walmart, you know, because Walmart, when I first got into this, wasn't even doing food. So in such a short amount of time, they're the number one food retailer, and they have gotten on the organic bandwagon. And now they're getting on, you know, they're really into local food. Now, that's not necessarily a good thing, but it is a sign that we are making huge, huge progress.
That's mainstream, right? It's becoming mainstream.
Yeah.
And like the article that I talked about at the beginning of the show, how, you know, studies have shown that the American food choices has definitely changed over, you know, since the 1990s. People are, you know, becoming more aware of, you know, the impact obesity has on them. Although, you know, I always have issue when it comes to diet and people just doing calorie counting, trying to reduce calories, but not paying attention to what those calories are. You know, I am, you know, they were celebrating the reduction of the intake of full sugar sodas. And my feeling is, if that just means that people are drinking artificially sweetened soda, well, that's nothing to be happy about. Right. That's nothing to be happy about.
No,
you know,
totally
so I want people to be making better choices, not just less calorie choices, but, you know, and I'm also with you that I do eat some processed food. You know, I'm going to eat tortilla chips. I'm also going to buy organic, but there's something about that crunch and salt, and you know, and then I'm going to buy a, you know, an organic salsa to go with it. You know, sometimes you just need to be able to put something out quick like that, and that's okay, but you want to be able to have that option to make those better choices.
Right. One of my big pet peeves is I'm not thin. Some people might consider me obese. I eat very healthy. Calorie in is not calorie out. I question if it's all about weight versus the quality of food that you're eating. All of our body types are different. I'm not saying living on a diet of McDonald's and snow cones, you know, that's definitely not healthy. But I think thin people who are drinking diet soda and smoking to keep the weight down and eating, you know, snack wells and all that overprocessed no-fat food, they're just as unhealthy as an obese person. So I think that just saying obesity is the problem, I don't know if that's 100% correct. I do know that there's problems related to it, but again, I think
most obese people are obese by eating the junk food. You're right that the people can, you know, have different body types, and I too am, you know, people call me Zoftic or whatever. I'm not a skinny person, and I'm a chef,
right,
and I'm around food all the time.
People. Right.
What's that?
I mean, I know very thin people that are very unhealthy. So just because you're thin doesn't mean you're healthy, and that I think is important for people to understand, because so many people, but especially women, think, oh, if I was only thin. No, if you're going to get thin by eating that plastic fat-free cheese and, like, stuff that's not food, and you might lose weight, but you're not healthy, and you're still setting yourself up for possible diseases, and, you know, you need to balance out and accept that you might not be a size zero, but you want to be a healthy weight and you want to just learn what your body type is and just be comfortable with that. Like, too many people strive for something that's impossible to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anyway, that's one of my pet peeves. That's one of my pet peeves, especially with the body image. You know, there's a lot of work on body image now, and we're not all going to be a size two or size zero.
Right. I agree with you. You know, I was brought up in a family where we all ate the same food. There were four kids in my family, and I was the chubby one. It was just the way it was. And so I never have been thin. And, you know, I'm not obese, but I've never been a skinny person. And you, like you said, you have to be okay with that. You know, I'm not going to be that thin person, but I'm certainly happy and I'm certainly eating well and I'm making a lot of people happy with a lot of really good food. So, you know, it's good. It's good. So any last thoughts you'd like to share with us before we run out of time? I know you talked about the Change Food Festival that's coming up that people can find out more information. Why don't you share your website and things like that with us?
Sure. The website is changefood.org. Another project we are launching in October is the Change Food Video Library, and that's changefoodlibrary.org, or you can get it through the Change Food site. But what we're doing is we're collecting the best short-form talks on food and farming and then putting information about the issues discussed into the database. So anybody anywhere can go on at any time and download information, educate themselves, and then we will be encouraging people to put on their own events and to show the videos, and then they'll have, like, lesson plans, discussion questions, links to campaigns, organizations working on the issue, so they can actually go into their local community and teach their family, friends, and neighbors. And I think my last thought is just that everyone to understand we're all in this together. We all have to eat, so we all have an impact on the food system. And that every time, you know, even if you buy one apple from a local farmer a month, you are doing something positive. You know, it's the little steps that create the big action. And just to remember that, and then everyone should congratulate themselves for the work that they are doing and not look at, you know, the missteps or the things that they haven't changed yet. Look at the good and, like, realize that we are shifting to a better food system and we are going to get there, but we're only going to get there if we do it together.
Right. Thank you, Diane. Beautiful words to close with. We really do need to collaborate and work together, and I look forward to doing that with you sometime down the road. Be really a lot of fun.
Thank you, Bonnie.
Yes, and everyone out there, have a great rest of the week, and eat well, have fun, and I'll see you again next week. Bye for now.